I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, can a coding boot camp successfully produce entry-level programmers in a mere 90 days? We'll learn how Zip Code Wilmington students have fared in the final chapter of our series, Life Reprogrammed. First, part of Jim Kemmy's pitch during the Philadelphia mayoral campaign was that he'd end the police practice known as stop and frisk. Now, months into the job, Kenny is realizing that it's not as easy as flipping a switch, as WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
Over the years, Stop and Frisk has acquired a lot of enemies. During his campaign, Kenny made his opposition to it a talking point.
It never was a good policy. It's not a good policy now. And in light of Ferguson and all the problems that we're dealing with in this country, it's something that needs to go away and go away quickly.
But now he's tweaked his position. Stop and frisk shouldn't go away quickly, he says. Instead, he'd like to make sure it's done legally and doesn't target minorities. Drexel University criminal justice professor Robert Kane says the mayor's taking a more realistic and nuanced position, but it's less punchy than his campaign promise.
Implementing such a, you know, pretty drastic policy change is very difficult, if not impractical.
The last time the police department's stops and frisks were audited, nearly 4 out of 10 of them were made illegally. In other words, pedestrians were stopped without there being what lawyers call reasonable suspicion. Police Commissioner Richard Ross says some of those problematic pedestrian stops were due to bad paperwork. For instance, not getting a supervisor's signature.
I mean, I think that gets lost in all of this talk about suggesting that that is a strategy per se, because we've never viewed it as a strategy.
Ross says the department will be doing new training to make sure officers understand what a proper stop is.
When you stop a person with reasonable suspicion, I mean, it's just one part of what you do.
Kane says when a stop and frisk becomes a policy to bring down crime, it runs into trouble because
stop and frisk rarely leads to an arrest. And really what it does is alienate entire sections of communities.
The problem isn't stopping and patting someone down, Kane says, but the way police interpret the freedom to do so. The most recent numbers show that 80% of all the 200,000 stops police made in 1 year involve minorities. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Late last year, 16 towns in rural South Jersey asked the state to investigate Verizon over reported issues with their phone and internet service. The state is still reviewing that request. And now a South Jersey lawmaker is getting involved, and he's hoping the rest of the state legislature follows suit. More from WHYY's Joe Hernandez.
State Senator Jeff Van Drew represents New Jersey's 1st District, which includes Cape May County and parts of Atlantic and Cumberland counties. He says he's heard firsthand the problems that residents are having with their phone and internet service through Verizon, the state's leading telecommunications provider.
I've spoken on their landline directly and been in their houses, and it's not acceptable. It's not up to the standard of acceptability, and we can do better. We need to do better.
Van Drew will introduce a bill to support those residents. It would let the legislature join the 16 towns in their formal request for an investigation into Verizon, a request that's been pending since November.
It would give more gravitas. It would give more strength and more power to the legal action itself, so it's something that certainly I believe will be helpful.
Bridget Harrison, a political science professor at Montclair State University, says state-level legislation may be exactly what's needed to nudge Verizon into addressing these complaints.
You know, it's one thing if you have mayors and council members from these municipalities griping. I think Verizon probably gets a good deal of that. But when the state legislature that you spent so much time, energy, and money trying to make sure that they're on your side politically starts calling for some kind of action, that may be what would be necessary to get them to remedy the problem.
Van Drew's colleagues in the assembly are planning to introduce an identical bill. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale industry is getting off to a rough start in 2016. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports that natural gas drillers are laying off workers and cutting spending amid low natural gas prices.
The sound of humming drill rigs has been tapering off lately. It's been happening for a while now, but this year the industry is going through a particularly rough patch. One prime example is Cabot Oil and Gas, Earlier this month, the company announced plans to cut its capital budget by 58% compared to last year. And that's a pretty big deal, according to Stephen Beck, who analyzes North American shale plays for the global consulting firm IHS.
The noteworthy thing about Cabot is that it's located, its operations are located in some of the best areas of the Marcellus in northeast Pennsylvania. And these are the wells in these areas are some of the most economic wells in the Marcellus.
Other major companies have also announced cuts this year. Southwestern Energy laid off nearly 40% of its workforce, including 200 jobs in Appalachia. Range Resources cut 55 jobs, and Chesapeake Energy saw its stock plummet as it fended off bankruptcy rumors after hiring a restructuring firm. The downturn has rippled through related industries, too. Clayton Bubeck is with the Lancaster-based engineering firm Ritu. He says the Marcellus boom was a shot in the arm just at the right time in 2008. Despite the Great Recession, Ritu was able to open new offices, and their workforce more than doubled to nearly 500 people. But suddenly, nearly all their business was oil and gas.
We really didn't understand what that cyclical nature was going to be as well as maybe we should have.
2 years ago, the company decided it needed to diversify, to insulate itself from the booms and busts of the industry. Today, Bubeck says Ritu has just under 400 employees and does about half its business in the overall energy sector, including some growing renewable industries.
And that's just the way oil and gas is. And it's just a commodity-based industry that when they're making, it's capitalism, when they're making money, they're drilling, they're doing work, and there's no time. You have to get it in now because I can make a lot of money now. And when the prices are down, they retract and try to keep all that money in-house.
Statewide, Marcellus gas production peaked last year and then started to slide. There are now just 19 rigs running in Pennsylvania. That's fewer than there were in 2008, before the boom took off.
It's really difficult for them to justify keeping all the rigs out there.
Lynn Westfall heads the Office of Energy Markets and Financial Analysis for the U.S. Energy Information Administration. It's the statistics arm of the Department of Energy. He says production declines really quickly from new wells, so companies have to keep drilling new ones just to keep up the pace.
So that's why production is going down, in that the new wells aren't making up for the loss from the old wells. So until you see the rig count go up into the mid-60s, you're not going to see production increases. As a matter of fact, you'll see production declines until you get to that point.
And less gas means less work. The most recent 2015 figures from the State Department of Labor show a loss of more than 2,200 oil and gas jobs compared to the same period in the previous year. And the slump is also hurting state coffers. Royalties from drilling on Pennsylvania forest land have dropped sharply this year, and gas companies will also pay less in impact fees, which have become an important source of revenue for local governments. But as an analyst watching all this play out, Stephen Beck says it's important to remember one thing.
The important thing is that the industry does go through these boom and bust cycles, as everyone knows, and the industry will get through this low-price period as well.
And Governor Tom Wolf is still advocating for a new severance tax on gas production. Last year, his proposal didn't get enough legislative support. This year, his administration expects his new plan would bring in just over $200 million. It's a small fraction of the $1 billion they'd hoped for last year. And this time, Republican lawmakers who have long opposed such a levy are starting to signal they may be open to enacting a tax this time around. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Bill Cosby is demanding that the accuser in his Pennsylvania criminal case repay a confidential sex abuse settlement because she cooperated with police who reopened the case last year. The actor's breach of contract lawsuit says the 2006 settlement bars Andrea Constand from voluntarily discussing the case with law enforcement. The suit contends she had no legal duty to cooperate with police in suburban Philadelphia because she lives in Canada. New Jersey's legislature passes a bill restoring a federal food stamps waiver that the Christie administration recently stopped applying for. The Assembly today approved the measure, requiring the administration to conduct a study on whether a need for the waiver exists. If it does, then the state must apply for the waiver. The bill now goes to Governor Chris Christie. The administration announced in December it would stop seeking a waiver for able-bodied adults without dependents for the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly called food stamps. Clear skies, 32 degrees at 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. The evening forecast, clear and cold, low 24 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 40. Still ahead, a new sports museum in South Jersey takes a home collection and puts it in the spotlight.
If you've ever watched the TV show Hoarders, that's what our house looked like. Only we had sports memorabilia instead of cereal boxes and newspapers. However, we do have cereal boxes and newspapers.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Among the CEO jobs in this country today, picking up the pieces at American Apparel has to be one of the toughest.
You know, this is not an easy turnaround. This is a, it's like gaining 1,000 pounds over 5 years and then deciding you're going on a diet. And then in 6 weeks, you're expected to lose all that weight.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How a big name brand is coming back next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace follows Newsworks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
In Philadelphia, everyone is reading Cold Mountain by Charles Frazier, an American odyssey of a Civil War soldier journeying through a divided country while his beloved struggles back home. Companion books 12 Years a Slave by Solomon Northup and The Civil War by Jeffrey Ward with Rick and Ken Burns add to our historical understanding. One Book, One Philadelphia features 8 inspired weeks of programming through March 30th. Details at freelibrary.org/onebook. The Free Library proudly supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Zip Code Wilmington launched last September with a simple yet ambitious goal: turn 19 novice coders into entry-level developers and do it in just 90 days. This week, we've followed students Sean Strauss and Joel Guevara as they attempt to complete the first Zip Code bootcamp. In our fourth and final installment of the series Life Reprogrammed, let's see if Sean and Joel can land a job and transform their lives. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt reports.
Program is winding down. I get a call from Sean Strauss.
Hello?
Hey, Sean. He and his classmates, including Joel Guevara, have been interviewing for 6-month apprenticeships at a group of pre-selected companies. Sean says he's got big news.
All right. Hit me. What we got?
Am I being recorded?
You're being recorded.
All right. I will be taking a job starting December 7th at Capital One.
Nice, man. You pumped?
Fuck yeah. You can quote me on that, too.
Shortly before Zip Code Wilmington started, Capital One rejected Sean, not for a coding position, but for a $13 an hour post working customer service. When I caught up with Sean a couple weeks into his new job, he still couldn't process how far he'd come.
It's really all a blur. Like, it happened so fast, and I loved it.
In our final chat, I asked him the ultimate cheesy interview question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Sean grinned.
I have no idea where I see myself, but I can tell you one thing. I'm really excited about the future. And that's a new feeling.
Sean was among the first crop of Zip Coders to learn his fate, but Joel isn't so lucky. After struggling at the outset, Joel started to prosper intellectually toward the end of the program. But a new problem has cropped up. 2 months after quitting his job as a carpenter to join Zip Code, his finances were in disarray.
I'm dead poor. Dead broke poor.
1, 2, 3.
You got a dime.
And a dime. And a quarter that I dropped over here.
$325. Is that literally all you're
getting? $335. That's all I got, brother.
To get by, he's borrowing money from friends and relatives. That apprenticeship, that paycheck, it can't come soon enough. By November 25th, he's just one of 3 in the class who haven't received an apprenticeship offer. When we talk outside his gym, it seems all the progress and optimism he'd built toward the end of the course has evaporated.
It's like I can never get away from something that's bad. From when I was a little child, you know. I'm never going to work, I guess, you know? Not going to have no money. Not being able to, like, Like, basically, I'm like a bum on the streets asking for a dollar here, a dollar there.
This is Joel's Valley. But in typical zip code fashion, a peak is just around the bend. Later that day, he recorded this on his phone.
Well, just left class. And I'm actually in a happy mode. I was told that I was offered a position with Diamond Technologies. And I clearly and gladly accepted it.
The enormity of what he'd accomplished didn't hit until a couple weeks later when he changed his LinkedIn profile from carpenter to developer.
All right. You ready, Seth?
It's early January, and Joel has one more move to make. He's taking the last of his items from the house he shared with his girlfriend to a new one-bedroom apartment. The new place isn't much, a loft above an old garage owned by his uncle. But the rent's cheap, and it's his.
Yeah, I'm blown away. You know, I still keep, like, thinking, like, I'm going to wake up from this dream, and I'm not going to be making the money that I'm making, and I'm like... What?
19 students started Zip Code in September. 16 finished in December and landed either a full-time job or a six-month apprenticeship in Wilmington. The question now is whether they'll stay.
The axe is swinging today at DuPont's Wilmington offices as Delaware employees learn 1,700 jobs would be cut.
3 weeks after the first boot camp session ended, DuPont announced it would cut more than a quarter of its Delaware workforce. The news was a psychological blow to a city whose destiny, for 200 years, has been intertwined with DuPont's. It also meant Wilmington will rely more than ever on financial institutions and the coders they employ. Joel Guevara is one of those coders now. Joel wants to move west. He's not sure where. He's not sure when. But he can picture it.
Sunshining, tons of land, decent house, built how I want it. Dogs, kids coming here and there. Just relaxing.
As Joel rambles, he smiles. And as he smiles, you get the sense that the image in his head looks clearer than ever. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
There's a brand new sports museum in Collingswood, New Jersey. And as WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, the two-story space is jam-packed with memorabilia and history.
Dr. Nicholas DePace is a cardiologist from Sewell, New Jersey, but he's also one of the country's premier collectors of sports memorabilia. It started with baseball cards and never really stopped. It's now 10,000 items strong.
If you've ever watched the TV show Hoarders, that's what our house looked like.
Nicholas DePace Jr., the doc's son, is CEO of the DePace Sports Museum.
Only we had sports memorabilia instead of cereal boxes and newspapers. However, we do have cereal boxes and newspapers. We have newspapers pertaining to sports. We saved the sports section for memorable events. And cereal boxes such as the Wheaties box with then Bruce Jenner on the box.
There were also scores of game-worn jerseys, boxing robes, and autographed baseballs. And some more oddball items. Jim Thorpe's family Bible, for instance. A warming blanket once draped over Seabiscuit, the champion racehorse from the 1930s. Last month, after 5 decades of collecting, DePace and his dad moved a few thousand pieces of the collection to the Haddon Avenue Museum, a former bank.
The enjoyment that we got from the collection, we felt that we could share with others. There's some great stories in here.
Eric Katz, the museum's curator, loves to tell the story about iconic entertainer Dean Martin and two unusual golf bags.
He went to the Masters Association and he asked them to make two bags up, two Masters bags, and to put a little metal plate on the front. And he wanted one to say, Frank, please forgive me, in Italian, Joe D. And the other to say, Joe D., please forgive me, Frank. And he was going to send them both the bags and get them back together.
This is Frank as in Frank Sinatra, and Joe D. as in Hall of Fame center fielder Joe DiMaggio. The two, as you may recall, had a feud over Marilyn Monroe.
Sinatra got his first. He called DiMaggio and told him how touched he was, what a nice gesture it was. He was sorry for his loss because Marilyn had passed already. And he said, it's ridiculous. We haven't talked in all these years over a woman. We really need to rekindle our friendship. And showed the manager. I said, who is this? He said, Frank Sinatra. Screw you, hung the phone up. When he got his clubs the next day, he went out to the lake on his property and one by one threw the clubs in there and then the bag, the golf bag. Frank Sinatra kept his. He golfed with him for many years.
Some of the more heavily insured pieces, including a practice jersey Jesse Owens wore during the 1936 Berlin Olympics, may never be displayed. Dr. DePace Sr. says his museum is unusual because it brings together memorabilia from many different sports.
You can go to Cooperstown and see baseball. You can go to Canton and see football. You can go up to Springfield and see basketball. But go in one building, one stop shopping, and see everything put together in a coordinated fashion. You can't do that anywhere in the country.
He also hopes it inspires visitors.
Lets youth know that America is opportunity, and America can lead the championship-type caliber in people.
The collection is estimated to be worth upwards of $40 million. Admission to the museum is free. I'm Aaron Mosel, WHYY News.
And finally this evening, the Philadelphia Police Department may be getting a new recruit, and you can call him Officer Yeezy. No, Kanye West hasn't enlisted in the police academy, but the door is open. The musician's riding high on media attention lately due to the release of his highly anticipated new album, and the third season of his Yeezy fashion line. But artistic endeavors can be expensive, and he's taken to Twitter to ask Silicon Valley's tech millionaires, notably Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, to help him out of a mountain of debt, $53 million high. Seeing this, Philadelphia's police department lent a gracious hand to Ye with a tweet. We're hiring, Kanye. Starting salary of $47,920, and you could be debt-free by the year 3122. They follow the advice with a link to their career webpage, suggesting Kanye has to apply just like everybody else. Let's hope his curriculum vitae is up to date. And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.